Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. And today we're talking with Tom Orrick, who is a UEFA accredited coach, author, and mentor. We're going to be discussing their journey and experiences in education today. Thank you for joining us, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me on as well. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm very thrilled that you're here as a friend and as somebody who's worked out with you for not very long. It's a great pleasure of mine. So, Tom, for our listeners around the world, can you give us a little bit of backstory, how you ended up in Korea, what you do in your day-to-day life?
Wow. Long story short, I was a very unsuccessful entrepreneur and independent in the UK. I grew up very rurally in Scotland. The only options I had professionally were either to become a shepherd or a forestry man, basically a lumberjack, for want of a better phrase. When I graduated from university, I came out with a geography degree that I had absolutely no idea what to do with. I went and worked around in bars trying to find myself, trying to experiment, doing everything. I think the best piece of advice I had growing up was from my grandmother. And she said, your 20s aren't for worrying about what you want to do. It's for finding out what you don't want. So I should just experience as much as possible. So I remember after university, my father had informed me that I would not be moving back into the house and that as a going away present, he would buy me an airline ticket one way anywhere in the world that I wanted to go, as long as I made my own way back. And so that the furthest I could go on a single flight was Japan. So booked that flight. That was 10 years ago. And I've kind of been skating around on that, unable to find my way back since. So I've fallen around lots of different ways, but my passion has always been coaching and sports. I was a middling professional athlete in rugby, retired very early, and then came to settle on my passion, which has always been football or soccer. So yeah, day to day. Goodness. You can always find me outside. I'll always be on a pitch. Or I'll be in a cafe chatting, meeting with coaches and working for the empowerment of coaching in my community, whether that's in Korea or wherever.
Wow. I can imagine landing in Japan, the furthest place you can get from Scotland, being a pretty like eye-opening experience.
I left Lochernhead, which is 100 people, one other person my age. I had 20 miles to go to school. If I wanted to go to the cinema, it was 2 hours away. I remember getting on that flight and everybody, the language transitioning from English into Japanese and then landing straight into the center of Shibuya in Tokyo. And my mind was just blown from that point. My world became much more exciting very quickly. Your lion is trying to escape, by the way. Don't need to pause. Why the big pause?
Easy. No, I love that. That was a beautiful story. And I think for all expats who haven't traveled anywhere for the very first time, I remember going into Kuwait and one of the first things was the heat that when those doors opened, it just hit me. Because Kuwait is a very English-speaking country, but no, I can imagine going to Japan and just being surrounded by that transition being just a massive.
Yeah, it's lovely that you talk about that. I think that's something that you're right, your listeners will appreciate, mostly being expats as well, is when you travel that far, when you travel to another continent, your communities are similar, but the environment is completely different. From like the heat, like you said, to the smells, to the proximity with which you get to things. You know, you can, especially in Japan, everything is so small and so inaccessible. You want to get in, you want to digest all of the little details and understand all the nuances.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I was only there for a very short time. I was coaching rugby in the infancy of the professional game there. And it was slightly unstable and a little bit difficult to have continuity and to support myself on zero income, essentially, in a very expensive city. And so very fortunately, out of nowhere, my flatmate's fiance's mother's aunt went high school with, this is very Korean, this is all about so-getting, the networking, the social joy. She connected me with the then under-23's national team manager of the South Korean team. And I contacted him, and sure enough, they offered me an interview to come and see if I would coach in their academy. So packed up my bags and flew to Korea for the first time. Landed in Seoul, had an interview in Korean. I didn't speak a word of Korean, so it was mostly mime. And then the next day, I started coaching in their under-15s. So I started coaching a very, very good team, very out of my depth. So asked them quickly to introduce me to their kindergarten team. So the best way I could learn, I felt, was for people to treat me almost like a child. You know, I was completely alien to the culture. And I wanted to understand the needs of the children at every age and stage of their development, and also the expectations and needs of the parents as well. So after a couple of months, I would graduate up to the under sevens and then the under eights, and found myself eventually at the end of my contract, my visa, coaching the under 15s as was originally planned. So it was a great experience. Eventually got there over the year.
Did you always want to be a coach growing up? How did coaching come to you?
Such a good question. I think that's something that's different for a lot of people. And when I've done podcasts or talked about this in the past, I very rarely have this share the same story in common with coaches. You know, I grew up very rurally. I probably count the amount of coaches I had on one hand. What I did have were fantastic female role models. So my father is still around. He's one of the greatest men and mentors that I could ever have asked for growing up. But his sacrifice was that he was away from home in order to support his family. So I grew up with a strong female influence who encouraged me and supported me to go out and experience. So I spent a lot of time learning by myself and learning from coaches who I selected. You know, I played rugby for many different teams, and I always chose the team based on the coach, and I was always interested by their experience. So that, I guess, that incentivized me to go out there and absorb as many different cultures and learn from as much as I could to be able to share that knowledge to then challenge young people. And that sunk in for me from a young age as well. I wanted to be out of there. It was a very small community.
Yeah.
And life is about experience, good or bad. It's all experience.
Well, it's, excuse the cliche, but it's like we're lifelong learners for a reason. And no matter good or bad, there's ups and downs, but we're always on a journey. Mm-hmm. And what we pick up on those journeys really do define the average of who we are. One of the best things I've ever heard was, you are the average of the three people you hang out the most with.
Mm.
That's why I pride myself on the diverse and group of people I hang out with and interact with, because we can't know everything.
Mm.
We can't. But what we can do is interact and learn from people who don't have the same experience as we do. And that's just really great to hear. So you pseudo graduated from step to coaching. You get to the under 15s. What is your experience coaching them?
So that was difficult. Just going back to your point quickly before I go into the emotional journey that I went on with those under 15s, you're absolutely right about surrounding yourself and being immolating into a group or into a community or family or whatever it is. And I think that transitioning from coaching in any team, my objective, whether it was, you know, doing a journal or running a company, was always my job was to surround myself with people better than me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I realized very quickly coaching those under 15s that I was not the best coach in the room, not by any stretch of the imagination. But because I had an advantage of my qualifications or whatever, I was in a position that I could assume that role. So my job very quickly became, how can I empower these great aspirant young coaches who aren't as qualified as me to address these barriers and support them in their growth to get them into my position? Because I knew these young Korean coaches I was working with were going to do much better than me. But because they didn't have the English skills or they weren't as attractive as a prospect, it was more difficult for them. So any opportunity that I had to experiment or to get other people involved has been definitely the most valuable time for me in Korea. And that led to starting a coach education course for reducing barriers for those who weren't able to travel internationally. To add a bit of context, it's very difficult for anyone who has no playing experience to become a professional coach. Even to enter your level one soccer coaching badge in Korea, you have to be able to demonstrate a certain basic level of technical skill. So if you, for instance, are in a wheelchair, you're unable to fulfill that basic requirement that the Korean Football Association has imparted on you. And so you cannot be a coach. So there are huge barriers that are quite dated and a lot of gender equality issues that need to be addressed in Korean football before those people have the opportunity that they deserve. And so that's kind of why I've stayed in Korea. Beyond just the coaching, it would be lovely to coach every day, but the role has transitioned as I've educated myself on the culture to be so much more about what can I leave as a legacy. And it is just trying to get people up to the level that they can be, because mm-hmm. they have the aspiration to be there.
No, absolutely. And having talked to you several times about your work and about empowering people and empowering coaches in our local community, it is very clear it is a passion of yours. How is that going over the last few years?
So with that little suffix of the last few years, incredibly badly. No, I just, it's every challenge is an opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's forced me to rethink. So what I was delivering in person as coach education and mentorship programs with lots of young people became something that we deliver without barriers. So we had to, as an organization, TNG.coach was set up, which is supposed to be the next generation in coaching, was set up to remove barriers, whether financial or geographical, to empower aspirant coaches to celebrate their own identity and go out there and experiment, go and find a team, whether they're volunteering or not, put down their goals, to be able to map their progress and reflect as learners. And the only reason I'm able to do that is because I have a fantastic partner who's educated me into the practices of, you know, higher level thinking and creating. And that's ultimately what you want to do. I could easily go out or do Zoom sessions and ask people to replicate what I'm doing and to sell it as, you will be a success if you could replicate that. But their environment and their context is maybe completely alien to me. There may be barriers that prevent them from being able to choose my path. So the coach's journal is a tool that we developed so that people can experiment within their context and feed back to us and just smack it to bits. And hopefully we can evolve and learn together as a coaching community, whether remotely or locally, to provide better support for them so they can explore the opportunities and be better, reflective, sustainable coaches.
That I sit here shaking my head, nodding in agreement, because what you're describing is what we as inquiry educators try to do all the time. Get students excited about what they do, give them resources to explore, getting them to create and then reflect on their learning, and then tying it back to the beginning. So it's a continual cycle of empowering learners. And I am not athletic by any stretch of the imagination, but I do really appreciate the connection between what you are trying to do as a coach and what I am trying to do as an educator in the classroom. And I just find it really amazing, the connections that you see right there. What are the challenges? And I automatically think of like trying to get students or young adults trying to replicate this idea. What are the challenges that you faced in being in such a culture of must replicate, must memorize, into being reflective thinkers?
Wow. Yeah. So without lecturing you and your listeners who will have a good understanding, I imagine, mm-hmm. of Korean society and Confucian culture, is that it's long rooted in the model of, you know, almost elitism, whether it's academics or athletics. It's an idol culture. The hierarchy, it's aiming for an unattainable top. You have everybody aiming for the same position. It's difficult to imagine a... Oh, sorry, I've gone blank on your question. Could you go... What was your question again?
What are the challenges you're facing to get your athletes to be reflective and to be a thinker when what I've experienced is they just want you to tell them what to do and how to do it. But what we're trying to do is give them the tools to be thinkers outside of those contexts. What are the challenges? Do you have any advice for coaches out there to get your young athletes to be a more reflective in their practice?
Mm. Yeah, it's a really, really good question. I mean, trying to, without the resources, I'm just trying to draw a parallel. You know, I cannot shine a light to the international school teachers and how you are constantly, you, each of you have your finger on the pulse of the curriculum and you're always feeding back to one another and you have a very clear pathway above, below and to the side. You know, you're working with peers, mentors, mentees every day. And it's a real ecosystem. You know, it's an immune system of accountability and communication. And for the most part, coaches don't have that. Very few of them work in an organization big enough that will have a culture of accountability. Mm. So they have no incentives perhaps to grow. So one of the greatest barriers for me in career was incentivizing people to develop professionally. There is no CPD, there is no requirement, the KFA or the Scottish FA or the USSF in America. Nobody's going to call you after you've completed your first coaching qualification and say, have you thought about developing? Or how are you getting on? Can we support you? That's never going to happen. I've spent several thousand pounds developing myself because I have aspirations of improving. Like you said, you know, a lifelong learner. And I take great joy in that as somebody who had a terrible time at school, performed so badly. I'm only starting to reveal or in myself discover the value of development. But for a lot of the people in South Korea, the barrier to entry into professional sport or into professional coaching is that you must have the CV. You must have that face value that gets you the position. And so people are only incentivized to develop up to the ceiling, which is a barrier for coaches, but it's also a barrier for players as well. And social constructivism is maybe a topic for another podcast that we could fill with an hour. But the greatest challenge I have is, I think, players and coaches valuing themselves as individuals. As a culture, it's quite self-immolating, like self-deprecating. Mm-hmm. So getting to realize that they have the ability, they can go outside and they can reach out, find a mentor, reach out and touch them, contact them, and get them to hold you accountable, mm-hmm. and then to share that knowledge. That's part of what the journal was about as well. It's how to name those people directly, go and contact them, talk to them, and try to build something that is a support structure similar to what you guys have at Chadwick, that will just help them to develop and be secure in that they're not alone in this, because there are so many amateur coaches out there doing the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see, like, you're smiling, you're excited about that. And I just wonder, when you're sharing this about empowering these students to break that ceiling, so to speak, reach further than just that certification and such, mm-hmm. do you have a person in mind or a story that you're thinking of that has done that?
Oh, so many. So I could name the people who've broken through on one hand, and only one of them out of five is female, and she is world class, absolutely world class, and will be, you know, a consummate, she will just be an elite professional. She's a sports scientist, and I think at the moment she's working with I think she's at Leeds now. She was at Huddersfield, she's at Crewe. She's worked herself up through the lower leagues of English football, having done a master's, paid her way to do that. And the only way for her to achieve her ambition was that she had to leave Korea. That was the only way, was for her to take a huge financial risk to go because she knew there were no opportunities within Korea for her. I mean, physical education has only been co-educational in Korea for, I don't know, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
The prospective physical educator was always male until 10 years ago they started offering it to women. So when these women who I meet who are my peers and my mentors, when they were growing up, they were unfortunately put into gender stereotypes, physical education roles that were based around beauty, dance, whatever that their PE was that. And so while the men's game was given professional and elite organization status, women's football and rugby and team sports were restricted to college campuses and high schools. So the great value in those lessons of team sports, social interaction, winning, and importantly, losing, they didn't get to experience that. So they've had to go out. It's all the more incredible that these young women go out and find it for themselves, because it's incredibly hard to do that, especially with a society and perhaps a family or community that is betting against you almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I can name a lot of people on one side, and I'm fortunate to still have contact with so many great professional women in the sphere that I just cannot shine a light to. Mm-hmm. I'm such a privileged man, white man, to have been given this advantage. And they started, you know, we're running a 100-meter dash and they started 50 meters back mm-hmm. behind the start line, and they're passing me. Yeah. And I'm only in my early 30s. I just think through the struggle, I think Korea will develop such creative, not as many perhaps as you would like, but such creative, innovative learners and coaches. And they have such value. When you interact with them, they're just mind-blowing.
When we say that we are educating the future of tomorrow, it really does take hold when you're in those rooms with those very innovative, very thoughtful individuals who you're like, yeah, you are going to change tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You're going to change today for better. You're going to change tomorrow to make it even better. Mm-hmm. And we are so far from textbooks and worksheets how's I grew up, into really helping all walks of life really get better and start at the finish line or start at the starting line instead of 50 meters back.
Yeah.
And we are trying. It is a process that we look at every day. So for somebody who is around Korea, around Asia, knows many, many people around there, who do you go for inspiration for?
Ah, see, this is a really unfortunate one. I wish I could answer differently. And this was something I was writing about recently for a research project. As I grew up as a coach, female role models and peers became less visible. They became almost fewer. I did my most recent UEFA accreditation with 100 people from all over the world. Probably the majority were international learners who paid a lot to travel and to get their accreditation in the country. Unfortunately, none of the coaches, none of our educators were female, and only two of the candidates out of 100 were female. And they both came from Canada. It was from a perspective of where I am now, most of the elite, I want to learn from the absolute pinnacle, whatever the industry is. I'm not exclusively looking to learn in football. I want to talk to educators like yourself, because I can learn so much. And only since meeting my partner Mary have I really invested myself in learning, and everything that I've developed from the coaching course to how I teach my coaches, she has just smashed it to bits. She's called me out on everything and helped me to become so much better and to grow. And so I'm now in a very fortunate position. I'm reaching out for mentors and for inspiration from people who I see at the absolute pinnacle of sport. So people like Colin Bell, Matt Ross, also white men, international, working in Korean women's football, but they are so inclusive. They're so at the cutting edge, and they're similarly driven, that they're trying to get female coaches into their coaching staff and give them opportunities and get them creating content. And so I'm fortunate I can reach out to those people to be mentors and to hold me accountable. And we meet for coffee and boy, yeah, they let me have it. It's perfect. It's so good to be creating content and to be okay with it being rubbish, you know, because it's the only way that I'm going to learn. You know, I'm fortunate to be invited onto your podcast. And I hope that somebody gets something out of it, but I don't anticipate that I'm, by any stretch of imagination, a coach at, you know, at the forefront. I'm trying to find, always trying to find and interact with those coaches who are doing things differently.
Absolutely. And anybody, everybody has a story. And I truly believe that every story is valuable and every story can help somebody else on their story and their journey. And I think the fact that you are so driven by quality and giving everybody an opportunity and supporting all learners, regardless of station, I think that is massive. And in such a male-driven sport,
yeah,
I think we need more people like you. We need more people to speak out, and we do. And if I can do anything, of course, I'm going to invite you over to chat about it, because it is something like that we are looking at in education. I mean, DEI is a thing that is here, and it's here to stay, and for good reason. We're here for it because we need to be more aware, and we need to catch our biases, and we need to look for ways of including, understanding, and valuing all walks of life. And so I'm very excited that you're here, a great friend of mine, of course. So what a piece of advice do you have for future coaches that might be coming on to listen who are just starting out?
Be contrary.
Can you tell me more?
I remember when I was 6 years old, I remember saying to my, I don't know what it prompted me, whether I'd read it or seen it on a film, but I just aped it to my father. I said, change isn't a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it was on. And he looked at me like I'd never seen him look at me. He was, where did that come from? That's not you. It was the biggest argument I think my father had ever had with me at that point. And it makes me quite emotional because I wasn't really sure what I was saying, but by challenging it, it's not ironic, but he taught me a lesson very, very early on in my life that change is great and you shouldn't be afraid of it. And you should feel brave enough to challenge anyone. So being contrary to me was taking the risk to leave Loch Earnhead. Like I said, there was one other person in my village my age, and he didn't leave, and he's still there. He's a lovely guy, and I see him once a year. But if I didn't take a risk and do something different, I would not have interacted with the people. I would not have learned the lessons. I've tried to do things differently and fallen on my face more times than I care to remember. Yeah, I've thrown up in bathrooms before doing speeches to people that I should not be there. You know, I've tried to do things and put myself and try to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. It's incredibly hard. And the only way you become good at it is by doing it more and learning and writing down. And not just writing down when things don't go well, but writing down when things are going great. There are so many times you come to the end of your day or you wake up and you think, this is a great day. But very rarely do we reflect and write down, well, why am I feeling like it's going to be a good day? What happened yesterday? Like, what are the set of circumstances? Yeah. How do I replicate this? So being, I think, for any young coach, I would just challenge them to not just follow, whether it's their senior or whatever, just ask for their help, you know. Be brave to ask them, you know, I appreciate you. I listen to you. I respect you. You know, how you work. Can I try this and get it wrong? And people might laugh at you. And that just helps you to understand what people you want to work for, how you want to market yourself. But being brave is all about finding out your value and being comfortable with who you are. And many times I've done that, even when I was talking to you earlier about me playing football with my old football buddies for the first time in 2 years. And I didn't really think about why I left that team. But after 20 minutes on the pitch, I pretty much remembered I should have written down why I didn't play with them anymore. They weren't very nice. So I've to reflect and to learn is a tool that we can all exercise and take advantage of.
Absolutely. One of the best quotes I've ever been given was from my amazing pop art teacher one of my first years. And I was always telling her, I'm afraid of making mistakes. I'm afraid of making mistakes. And her being an art teacher, every time a student made a mistake, they always wanted a new piece of paper. And she said, and always said, turn that mistake into a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And so when I said, I'm afraid of making mistakes in the classroom, she said, well, how are you going to turn it into a masterpiece then? And I have carried that with me every day into a lesson that will be, could be rubbish or has turned rubbish. And I'm like, how are we going to turn this into a little bit better situation? How am I going to turn this into a learning opportunity, not for the students, but for me, so I can make the next lesson a little bit better? And I think it really was challenging the way of what does that mean to be reflective and to try something new and being okay with it not being 100%.
I think I want to just cluck onto that because you say the word innovation, and I love that word so much. Mm-hmm. And the most interesting young people I met recently are young European university students studying business degrees and innovation. And I just love that idea. I wish that that was an option when I was at university before I signed up for that geography degree. I wish that I could have done that, because innovation, like you're saying, the definition of innovation is that you should aspire to make a reasonable number of mistakes, mm-hmm. aim to make them, test the boundaries of things.
Yeah. And what better way of learning than making mistakes and getting back up and trying new things?
Yeah.
So, Tom, real quick, where can people find you to connect with you to maybe continue learning with you?
Well, they can go online. They can just type into their search bar tng.coach. That's the domain name. And they can find a little bit more information on our coaching journal. They can also find us on Instagram through the same way, tng.coach. We're always looking for feedback. It's the most valuable commodity to us at the moment. Please just, you know, smash us, ask us whatever questions you want. Let us know what you need as coaches, as educators. Something that's really surprised me with the coaching journal is one out of five people who buy it are actually coaches, and they seem to be finding an immense use for it. So if we're not meeting the we want to know how we meet the needs for every person who can use it. So please do reach out to us either through Instagram, or you can just get me at tom@tng.coach.
Thank you so much, Tom. And all of those links will be listed in the show notes down below. Tom, we asked all friends here at the Recess Duty a very specific question, and we end every interview with it. What do you remember from recess growing up?
Recess, I remember, was my favorite time. Almost as good as that time immediately after school gets let out, and all your parents were there waiting to pick you up from school, and they would be talking to each other, and you knew it was like a golden moment. You didn't know how long that conversation was going to last, but you knew you could run as far away as possible to get outside of earshot from them, that they'd have to come looking for you. So I remember getting out of school 4, 5, 6, 7 years old and having a tree that I would just aim for with my best mate, and we would try to get to the top of that tree before our parents would be screaming at us.
What a beautiful memory. Thank you, Tom, for joining this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us in your favorite podcast app so that you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and I hope you have a great day of learning. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our recess duty.